welcome to another episode of the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course, on our podcast. I'm AD Packham, and we are still scraping ourselves off the ceiling in association with OldFootballShirts.com. Well, it's been a hell of a week on Planet Albion. First, on Saturday, we came from behind to beat Huddersfield in our second win on the road this season and our first at the home of the Terriers since 2006. And then on Tuesday, did anything happen on Tuesday?
No.
I'll tell you what happened on Tuesday. I saw Al smile. It was horrible. Don't do it again, Al, please. Well, basically, what happened on Tuesday, our 10 men smashed Crystal Palace, which pleased us greatly. And then, just as we're basking in the afterglow of getting one over our friends from up the road, the ladies' team went and put a further 5 past them, making the aggregate score this week Brighton of Albion 8, Crystal Palace 2. Today we head to Burnley, who have struggled this season and are currently in the bottom 3. Can we build on our nosebleed-inducing 10th spot? Also this week, pulses were set racing as we were borne away to Bournemouth in the third round of the FA Cup, which is everyone's really excited about, really.
Honestly. To be honest, I think most people have forgotten, haven't they?
Pretty much.
And joining me today is, of course, Alan Wares, and we are delighted to welcome back Simon Maskell and also Bradley Stratton. Welcome back,
hello,
boys.
Guys.
Hello.
Well, how was your week?
It's been all right, isn't it?
No idea.
Can't complain.
I've been glowing.
Can't remember.
Is that just the red light above your head?
Yeah, well,
welcome back. Well, Simon, it's been a long time since you've been in. And we were just talking about it before you went on air there, that the last time you were here, Sammy Hooper was still in charge. And what a long way we've come.
That's right. It was just after the 1-0 defeat to Millwall. And I was in the studio here with Attila. And we just moaned and moaned about Sammy Hippier. And within a few days, he was gone.
Attila moaned, you mean, not you. Yeah, you didn't get a chance.
Chris arrived, and what a journey since then. It's been the most fantastic time.
Yeah, God.
Well, in that case, let's hear it, Simon. I mean, you know, it is a fantastic time. And I think that probably, you know, we've spent week in, week out talking about this. And when you talk about the incremental improvements we're making and the leaps and bounds and all the journey and everything like that, in between you being on the Raw last time and we were in a bit of a slump, and now, you say about this journey, how's it been for you personally?
I've enjoyed every moment of it. You get the ups and downs. It's not always success. Doesn't always come in straight lines.
It's not always pretty.
And it isn't. I've been away and seen some dreadful games. But you believe, and the Amex has been a fortress, and I've just enjoyed it. I've got to meet all the people around us in the stands. It's all the same people going there every week, although probably for the first time on Tuesday, we all gave each other a hug.
Aww.
That's what was so big about Tuesday in terms of the football. But
this,
I
is
like
only
us
just,
to win
this is only just another part of the journey, though, isn't it? It's not the culmination of it. And here we are sort of glowing a bit. And by the way, for anyone who is listening here, expect some gloating later on. Not that we normally do that, but, you know, just this one week, allow us a little bit of a gloat. But, you know, it's not the culmination of it. I mean, you're saying we had a hug. Brilliant. But, I mean, you must have hugged the people around you so many times in the intervening, you know, in those intervening 4 years, Simon.
Well, some of them you like to hug, some of them you've stayed
fair
clear.
Yeah,
this is a family show.
Yes. No, but hugging a football sense is a beautiful thing.
That's right, and we've stood on chairs, and I don't think I've actually sat in my seat in the North Stand since the Amex opened, although I did put both feet on it this week, which I want to apologise to Paul Barber. I stood on my chair. Hopefully someone's dusted it off for next time we go.
Well, it depends on what you've been walking in
as
first.
Long as you weren't doing it for a pie. I mean, obviously we don't condone that sort of thing, but, you know.
But Brad, I mean, you must have been, I mean, you were on earlier this season, so the journey sort of since your previous appearance on here is slightly different, but I mean, Tuesday night must have been, we will talk about it in detail, but it must have been something a bit special for you too.
Yeah, it was. I mean, so many of the bigger games last season I've not always been there for, so to see that kind of result against that team was every time you can get something over them, it is special. Yeah. But there was something that's as close I think we have had to having what they felt when they beat us 5-1 that time. That's our
Now, Brad, I mean, you're the youngest person in here by some distance, unfortunately, for the rest of us. So, I mean, what does the derby mean to you?
I feel like it means as much to me as to everyone else, to be honest. Is that indoctrination
or just...
Growing up, it was always Brighton's rival is Palace. You hate Palace. And as much as I never liked Man United as well growing up, that was another one of those teams instilled in me by my dad not to like. I think I've still got his copy. There was a book in the 90s called Stand Up If You Hate Man United with an alternate history where things turned where we actually won the cup final and United went into a complete...
That parallel universe.
Yeah, that parallel universe. Yeah.
Yeah, we go there often.
The parallel universe where we beat Palace with 10 men, that one.
Yeah.
But as well as beating Palace this week, we also beat Huddersfield. And as we mentioned on the show last week, that it was the first time we'd won there since Jake Robinson scored a hat-trick, which was...
Well, should we talk about that game then?
Oh, we could talk about that one if you so desire. There was a few changes to that team, wasn't there? Houghton gave a first start to Ndoni, and Bissouma got the nod over Kaya, who was walking a disciplinary tightrope, which is why we thought he got the nod. But as it transgressed, he kept his place.
He kept his shirt.
And let's face it, he really wound up the Huddersfield supporters.
Okay, well, let's go with you first, Simon. I mean, let's talk about the first action of the game, which was 50
Do
seconds
we have
into
to,
it. Well, if we're going to be fair and honest, and you know, it's a counter argument that we'll have later. That you know, if we're going to gloat now, then we've got to actually be a little bit more humble. Sort of first off for Bruno's, well, Skaya
absolutely sliced it up in the air back into the goal mouth, and Matty Ryan, you know, probably should never have come for that. Although, to be fair, the header went high off the side of the post into the net, so I'm not sure even if he stayed on his goal line, he would have saved it. But it was a horrendous start. But from that comes character, and
absolutely,
Brighton showed that to respond well. As it seems to be this season, there's lots of funny... I'm not saying funny refereeing decisions, it was wrong, but sort of contentious that sort of... then got us back into the game, and that really helped. And then that only looked like really one team winning it. But Bruno, yeah, made a mistake, but didn't he make up for it with what he did? And I'm sure I'm probably getting ahead of myself because AD's going to go through it. But
I was about to say that's a cross that actually that he put in that Steve Penny would have been proud of.
It would be. Oh, yeah, Steve Penny. Oh, yeah, we're going to talk to him later.
What? Yay. Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
I know. Who signed him? I can't. Yeah. But I mean, just retracking a little bit there, Simon, because basically what you just said is there's contentious issues there. And next season, we could be having this could have been a very, very different week. If VAR was involved this week?
Yes. VAR is not going to solve all the issues. It's going to be coming, you know, very many more talking points. But certainly this week, I mean, on appeal for the sending off, you know, Huddersfield put an appeal. They didn't win it. And the assessors, the professionals, had a chance of TV evidence to show that it was a sending off offence. I actually got into a conversation with one of the Huddersfield fans on Twitter who was very upset about it, in the same way that I was upset about Stevens getting sent off at Cardiff. But both of them were, you know, knee height, shin height, whatever. And when you sit back and reflect on it, both of them were dangerous. And yes, in my day, they were totally part of the game. In Bradley's day, they never have been.
Brad, so what was your opinion of it?
It's a hard one. Yeah, like you say, it, you know, in the past it wouldn't have been given, but it's the letter of the law these days. As much as it looked like maybe he was pulling out of the challenge at the last minute, it wasn't the cleanest of hits. It was still, you know, way above the ankle, and it's hard to argue it. But then again, a lot of us would have been arguing the opposite way for Stevens in sending off at Cardiff. So it's a hard one to... It almost comes a slight hypocrisy sometimes in that sense.
It does. It just seems to be incredibly weird that there's been four sending offs in the last four games, and all around the same minute. I mean, usually when you see a red card, I mean, it is usually sometime in the second half.
What are you saying here, AD? Are you insinuating anything?
I am not insinuating. You know what? I don't really know what I'm saying.
it's just a coincidence.
I'm just utterly perplexed by it.
It is. It's just a strange thing. And yet, funnily enough, all four red cards were probably... Well, not probably. They actually were all correct. Obviously, there's only one of them that was a second yellow. And the fella actually sort of publicly apologised, even though I felt that was a little bit crocodile tears. You know what I think about the Stevens one, and let's face it, the professionals have all said, no, that was clearly a red. Likewise with Meunier's one, no, it wasn't wild. It was clumsy. It was careless. There's no reason for his leg to have been up. Even if he was pulling out, he glanced Bissouma's leg. And I think it hit the top of the shin that actually really stings. I mean, it wasn't. It doesn't have to be wild. It doesn't have to be reckless. I think the phrase I'm going to use is clumsy, but it doesn't have to be wild or reckless in order for it to be a red card. Point in case, let's look at something like, I know we're going back 20 years, David Beckham flicks his foot out, petulant stuff, you know, didn't hurt Simeone at all, but that level of, you know, you have to, as I think the phrase that was used a few minutes ago, the letter of the law. You know, and the law is quite clear on this. So, yeah, I'm sure he meant no malice, but you then do have to query Meunier's leg being that high. As for Wagner moaning about it afterwards, well, that was arguably clearer cut than Stevens, though you can't compare and contrast the two that easily. But red's a red.
I think he was comparing it with Balogun's tackle late on in the game.
Which was nothing like the same. Nothing like the same. I mean, Balogun's, his foot was never came more than about an inch off the ground. It was clumsy. It was a foul, and it was certainly a yellow card. But to compare the two, that really was pathetic.
That's right. I mean, I did like Maddison coming out and apologising. I thought it was the right thing to do. Mm-hmm. He anticipated something and fell over.
I love that euphemism.
A lot of players do that, and he came out and he was open and honest about it. I mean, others have apologised for their...
But you could say exactly the same about Iheanacho in the second half when they got the penalty. He was already going down when, yes, the tackle, the challenge came in, and it shouldn't have come in that manner.
Yeah, but in that instance, I mean, he really was clattered. So
he was offside.
That as well, but...
He was offside and already falling over, but hey, we don't make the rules.
Yeah. No. It has been... We've gone through a period of ifs and buts and refereeing decisions a lot in the last... A few weeks.
I really hope this continues next season. Though,
I can't see VAR overturning any of those decisions, to be honest, because VAR is there to correct a clear and obvious error.
We'll talk about the Palace game and the penalties given and the penalties not given in that game later on. But let's just talk about the guy.
I was specifically talking about the all four red card ones from each of those games. Okay. I don't think that at that time VAR would have overturned them.
But we were talking about the man whose leg nearly did get broken in that Meunier tackle was Yves Bissouma.
Now, he's come of age, hasn't he?
He's been very much in and out. Chris has been managing him quite well.
Certainly is. I mean, certainly from when I saw him in that Birmingham pre-season friendly, you could see the potential he had, the talent he had coming off the bench.
Are you excited?
I was, yeah. But it was always the knowledge that you knew that a pre-season friendly isn't always going to be transferring into that first week of the season in the Premier League in August. And as we've learned from the way Chris brings through these players, it's paid off. Anyone seemingly saying, you know, get them in straight away, you know, especially when you look back to the furore on Instagram regarding Jahanbash. But there's a knowledge there in terms of, this is what Chris Hughton does with the new players coming in from abroad. Gives them time to settle in, learn the way, and by this point, it's Kiedo last season. The second half of the season was when he hit that stride.
Mm. Well, you could say the same with Martin Montoya as well, to a certain degree.
Well, actually, Martin Montoya was actually thrown in a lot earlier, I felt. He was probably more helped in as much as that. You know, when anyone who's Spanish is probably kind of that much more easily enveloped. But someone who's coming in who, and if we're talking about Bissouma, and if we're talking about Jahanbash, who, you know, it's one thing getting used to the English culture because we are basically mental over here, but it is also about the nature. They've come from Dutch and Belgian football, which is clearly a different beast.
I think there's also worth talking about the experience as well, because Montoya, the sides he's played for before coming here, there's that experience.
Champions League final. Yeah.
you can throw him in the straight in and know that he should be at the level you'd hope to be.
I mean, and Bissouma, I was expecting a lot. Adam Virgo came on here telling how good he was, and he was surprised that he'd come to Brighton. There was a lot of other clubs looking at him. He had Champions League, didn't he, have some of the experience? I'm not surprised it's been, I wouldn't say fast-track, because I think some of our growth happens accidentally by injuries and someone coming in and proving themselves. And he's really done that. And, he was great. on Tuesday as well.
Well, the thing I think we first saw Bissouma, I think it was on the first game of the season, and Pascal Gross has not, I know he's been injured, but he's not still not had the greatest of seasons so far. I mean, it's real sort of grinding stop start, and it's not fair to blame him and him alone for the Watford performance, because we were absolutely dreadful that day. But what was clear was when Bissouma came on, he did more in the first 10 seconds than Gross had done in his 70 minutes. And we saw there was something about him. It was a little bit raw, I think, a little bit naive at times. And I still...
Tenacity?
He was tenacious, he was skillful, he was fast, he had the idea of going forward. I still think there is a certain naivety about him. I would still prefer to see, for instance, when we're playing the top teams, I'd still prefer to see Stevens and Proper if they're ready. But for something like Huddersfield, for something like Palace, those games are kind of tailor-made for him, and he has got better each appearance.
Gun to head then. Dale Stevens is available for this weekend.
Personally, I'd say play Bissouma for Burnley, but bring back Stevens for Chelsea.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. No,
I think Bissouma and the midfield that we've had deserved to play tomorrow. Definitely, you can't. If you get sent off, he made a mistake, and other players are coming in and playing just as well. You know, they should keep their places.
Yes. What do you reckon, Adi? I mean,
I've always been a very firm advocate of if you've got the shirt, you keep the shirt.
But if Stevens is ready against Chelsea and Arsenal,
I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, you could argue we're going to have the same argument in a couple of weeks when Shane Duffy's back in again after his suspension. And you know, if Balogun comes in and he carries on the trajectory that he's on, then We all know that how Chris manages this.
Chris's thing is that he has his first 11 and he wants to keep to that as much as possible. So the only one of the reasons why Bissouma was playing was because Stevens wasn't. But it worked perfectly okay against Palace because Palace were dreadful. And we'll come to that and we'll talk about that and we'll just point out in every single detail that we ever can just how dreadful they were.
Okay,
I think Brad was going to say sorry.
It was on a similar note about in terms of bringing the players back in. I mean, it's going to be a different situation because Duffy has been suspended, but you look at when Dunn got injured and Balogun came in, and it was that Fulham game where we didn't think he'd play. It's just for an international break, so you'd think maybe it's worth sticking with what we got. He brought Dunk back in, and maybe it was a bit too soon. He made a few of the mistakes that definitely at least one of them cost one of the goals against Fulham. So there's always that argument for if the team's playing that well, how much does it displace the momentum you have in that sense?
If I was Balogun, I would have been spitting feathers having been dropped for that Fulham game, but...
But I think therein lies the point. I think it just underlines the fact that Chris has his first 11. And if they're available, they play.
And as far as Duffy's concerned as well, I mean, I think most of us will agree, he's probably been our best player this season.
Well, I think he's certainly up there.
Definitely.
Yeah, certainly. You know, if the season finished now, player of the season, he would be in with a big shout. Certainly.
And a great equalising goal against Huddersfield last week.
Absolutely. So
it's funny how you should mention that. Well done, you've read my notes. Okay, so Proper pings the ball to Bruno, who acrobatically
I'll do it for you, mate.
Wins a corner, and he takes it quickly.
Can we cut in there? 38-year-old bloke does the splits. Nearly realises he's not going to have any more children after that. What on earth is a 38-year-old doing there, chaps?
It just shows what a great player he is. Got, you know, total respect for the way he looks after himself, trains, and that was just unbelievable. He was probably still hurting from what happened in the first minute.
Well, to be honest, the position of his clearance, you know, the splits he did for that was exactly the same. Bruno, keep your legs together, mate.
Yeah. But he did. He got that acrobatically, amazingly well. I mean, it was like ballet. It was stunning. He speed of thought, got it off to March. Who's pinpot?
Whose teeth are you wearing tonight, Adi?
I haven't even been drinking yet. He says, but his pinpoint cross from Solly March was headed in by the swiftly advancing Shane Duffy.
Who wasn't in the box when the cross even came in. I mean, it was just Huddersfield weren't ready. Brighton weren't ready. I mean, it really was a quick-thinking, brilliant corner kick.
Another high ball into the box, like at Southampton away, where he had plenty of time to see it and no one went with him, and a great finish.
It really was. I mean, I just
weren't even wearing green.
This pleases me. This pleases me. Yeah. But, you know, he's had the practice this season. But, I mean, it is amazing that, I mean, we'll talk about Palace again in a minute, but, I mean, like, the amount of goals that we've had this season that have actually come from, but that's 6 goals from defenders already.
We need it, because we're not firing on all cylinders in other parts of the pitch, and therefore goals from Duncan Duffy have been fantastic and really helped.
To be honest, it's about time, because they had so many chances last season.
Yeah.
And they were both at corners and free kicks, Mr. 50p heads.
Yeah, I think I want to say it was maybe the Arsenal game at home was the first goal we scored from a set piece.
And even that
defender.
Wasn't a header.
Yeah.
Dunk.
That was Dunk.
Yeah. Well, that was Dunk assisted by Duffy, wasn't it?
I believe it was.
Yeah. Yeah, it's they won, especially Duffy won so many headers at corners last season and has done this season, and they were ridiculously and hopelessly over the bar.
Okay, well, let's just fast forward through this, Ben, because we wanted to see Andoni for a while. I mean, and he's been coming on, and he's been having a lot of cameo appearances, and he's been looking very lively, looking decent, and he got the opportunity for a start, and boy, did he take that opportunity.
Oh, yes.
Great header. I mean,
he's been great for us. He's looked so much of a footballer that Lacadia hasn't, in some respects. And I didn't really want to go there, but he's just settled in straight away.
Like you say, like the comparison to how Bissouma looked coming at Watford was the same I'd make when Andone came on at Cardiff, and you compare just the work rate of his compared to every time we'd seen Lacadia was just... It was what we needed when we are playing that one man up top.
No, because he works front and back, doesn't he?
You don't want to have to criticise Lacadia, but you can see that Andoni has shown him how to do it, frankly.
Yeah.
You've got a feel for him, though. I mean, I still suspect that, I mean, if and it is a big if, judging by what we've been hearing in the dispatches, that if Lacadia is still here come the end of January, I do see a time when we would play the two of them together, and I think that would work really, really well.
I can see them playing against Bournemouth in the Cup, let's put it that way. It'll give Murray a rest, and that's the time to actually see if they can work together.
Yeah.
But for the, who knows that they might actually, if Murray is crocked at the moment, and we don't know, you know, as we're recording this, if Murray is crocked, then it might be Lacadia and Andone. I mean, Pascal Gross is going to be pretty cheesed off. We'll come to that again in a bit. So he'll want to actually put in a good shift. So, yeah, it's just, I take Summer's point, you wince a bit when you're saying, oh, Lacadia, but sorry, Andoni's the business.
Yeah, and it was a great goal. And another pinpoint ball from Solly March.
Solly March,
Good old Solly. I think he's playing really well this season.
Do you think the criticism of him was warranted early this season?
No, I think he does I don't. He does a really important job for the Albion defensively. Yeah, sometimes I get frustrated but it was like earlier this week, he looks up to see what's in the middle. There's no one there. He has to pull it back. So I think he should just get on and enjoy his football. He did everyone a favour by playing number 10 role, which may not be natural for him. But
and
I
that's
think...
it, as much as he's had his knockers. As much as he's had them, he's, you know, had, despite that, he's been playing out of position a lot of times, like you say, in that number 10 role, and still, you know, putting in his shifts.
I wouldn't be surprised if he becomes the best left-back Albion have ever had at some point. He's got many years left.
I've said it on here, show many times. He will become a wing-back. I see
if
that.
If we do go 5-3-2, then he is a perfect wing-back, I think.
But it was a great cross into the box, but Andoni, he had a lot to do. He had a lot to do, and that was a great header, and it was past the goalkeeper.
Before he knew it, and
that was game over.
Well, you are listening to the Albion Roar here on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, online at RadioReverb.com, on DAB, and of course on our podcast. We are, as ever, delighted to be brought to you in association with the brilliant OldFootballShirts.com, and Phil Shelley from Old Football Shirts has given me a lovely shirt of the week, which I'm just going to pass over to Simon there. And of course, Simon, you describe that for me in a second, but Phil will be hopefully modelling two of these for us at Rialto Theatre.
Not at the same time.
This coming Wednesday. Tickets are still available. We'll talk to you about that a little bit later on. But Simon, talk to me.
It looks like predominantly a blue or black shirt, depending on the printing, with sort of a yellow under each arm all the way from the top to the bottom. The sponsor is Sol.
As in the beer?
As in the beer,
It looks like, yes, the beer.
Who's the shirt maker?
It's got Marvel on it as the shirt maker. It's not a Spider-Man outfit, but it looks like Marvel, and you can't really tell a lot from the badge. So if it was Soul, I hope it's something Spanish or Colombian, because AD then, I think his Spanish is really coming along from previous episodes. Although his Russian was dreadful last week. So I'm going to guess it's a Colombian team.
Okay, so if we're going to have a stab in the dark, I'm going to say a Mexican shirt. I know that Phil likes to do his Mexican shirt, so I'm going to say nominally a Mexican shirt.
You are correct.
Ooh.
Well, Bradley was nodding there as well.
Yeah. I can just say that we're all nodding Hispanic. Okay. Let's go.
So here we go then. This is your shirt of the week for this week. It is the 98-99 home shirt of Mexican side Real Zamora. They hail from the city of Zamora, which is in the free and sovereign state of Michoacán de Ocampo on the Pacific coast, midway between the USA and Guatemala. They play in Liga Premier, which is the third flight of football in Mexico, and the home ground is a 7,200 capacity Estadio Zamora. I can cope with that one. Their nickname is Los Chongareros, which translates to the Chongo Makers.
And what are chongos?
A bonus point if anyone knows what a chongo is, says Phil.
I have no idea. Anyone?
No.
No. Okay.
You eat.
Okay, Phil, you've beaten us. What is a chongo?
I wish we'd known this when Bobby was playing for us, actually. Yeah. A chongo is a Zamoran speciality, a dessert made of curdled milk flavoured with cinnamon and brown sugar.
Oh, I say.
Sounds quite nice.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And they were formed in 1950, and the Chongareros played at all levels with their purple patch, probably started in 1957 when they won the second division and made it to the top flight. Since then, it's been mostly levels two and three. In 2005, they became a subsidiary.
That was the English word.
A subsidiary of the top flight side, Jaguares de Capatos. Yeah, okay. However, they look back on their independence. They took back their independence in 2008. The club have a policy of local recruitment, with 90% of their squad being local to Zamora. There you go.
Brilliant. Okay.
And thanks for that, Phil.
Yep.
I am now delighted to be joined by the greatest player ever to don the blue and white striped shirt of the Albion, in my opinion. It's Mr. Steve Penny. Welcome back to the show, Steve. How are you?
I'm fine, Eddie. Very nice to speak to you again. I'll give you that money later on after that introduction. That was very nice of you. Nice to speak to you again. Yeah.
Regular listeners to this show know the high regard in which I hold you. And
that's right.
And until recently, I mean, you were actually the most capped Albion player we've ever had until Shane Duffy overtook that record, ironically, against Northern Ireland.
All right. Yes, I know. Shane's doing very, very well. And I mean, that record, I was very, very proud to have it for a number of years, but someone had to take it over. And I'm sure that now that Albion's established in the Premiership, I'm sure there'll be a number of players beat that now. But it was a lovely honour to have that for a number of years. In fact, last year I was over at the Chelsea game, and Paul Barber was kind enough to arrange for me to pop down to the museum in the club, which is very, very, very good. And I was able to see the old International Honours Board, and still brought back a lot of fond memories.
That's the one they used to have in the ticket office at the Goulston, wasn't it? I remember.
Well, they used to have a large one. Yeah, I think it's not the exact same one, but it's I don't think it is anyway. It seemed to be larger, the other one, but it's all nicely done now, and it was very nice. I had my brother-in-law over at that game, and he didn't believe I really played that many games, but there you are. He was able to see that, and we had a great day. So I mean, Shane Duffy's done obviously very, very well, and I'm pleased that somebody broke it, and another Irishman, I suppose, is excellent as well. Although he did blot his copybook a little bit against Palace there, but the team was able to bail him out there with a fine display with only 10 men, so that was good to see.
Okay, we'll touch on that in a minute, but I mean, obviously the Albion are on a slightly different trajectory now, but there was a time when that record of yours looked like it would never, ever be broken. And, you know, now we've got internationals in every position, and including an England international. So, I mean, it's the club has just moved on leaps and bounds, hasn't it?
Oh, the club has done fantastic. I mean, I'm so pleased that last year they stayed up, and this year they seem comfortable now. And the more years they stay in that Premiership, the club will only improve, get bigger and bigger, and they'll get more income. They'll be able to attract the better players. So, yes, I mean, absolutely. Now the club under Chris Hughton is doing fantastically well, and it's great to see. I mean, it's the first result I look for every week, but especially at the end of last season, it was getting a wee bit of squeaky bum time, and I was glad to see them just getting the odd victory there at the end that kept them up. But I mean, it's such a competitive division. I mean, just for Brighton to stay there to establish themselves for a number of years is what they really need to do.
Yeah, I mean, with the start we've had this year is fantastic. 21 points on the board already, mm-hmm. And of course we had that big win midweek this week. Now you were at the club for 8 years, Steve, so you've played in a few of the derbies. So what are your memories? What are your memories of those?
Well, I remember once. I mean, my main memory is we beat them. I think we beat them 3-0. I mean, you'll be able to tell me. Your memory is a lot better than mine.
It was 3-1 at the Goldstone in 1984.
Yeah, we won at the Goldstone, and I think we won 3-0 or 3. I think it was 3-0, 3-1. But I set the three of them up, and that was one of my best games. And I always remember that because it meant so much to the fans, you know. So maybe you can tell me what the score was. But I remember we scored three anyway, and I think I set the three of them up, which was very pleasing at the time.
And people wonder why I call you the greatest Albion player of all time. Setting up three goals against Palace. And, you know, it's stuff legends are made of.
But that's right. You wanna, yeah. I know how much it means to the Brighton supporters, obviously.
Well, I mean, you say that. I mean, there's obviously a lot of foreign imports at the club and stuff these days. They may not necessarily understand the relevance of these games. I mean, you don't have to really explain the Merseyside derby or the North London derby, but this one we get asked to explain on a regular basis. So, for you to be able to play in these games, I mean, how was it explained to you?
Well, Even to this day, I mean, my friends and all over here always say they always think Portsmouth or Southampton. They're not really aware that Palace are actually our greatest rivals. But I mean, I remember that. I mean, Mark Bright and Ian Wright used to play on that team and all. So they were a really, really good team at that time. And it was always, you know, when we played against them, it was always good to beat them or to put a good performance up against them because they were a very strong team. But I mean, I moved over to play for Brighton, I wasn't aware that Brighton and Palace were the main rivals. But as you say, Liverpool, Everton, everyone knows Man City, Man United, Rangers, Celtic. But I tell you what, the fans don't like each other. I mean, I've known that over the years. And if you get a good victory, it means a lot to them the following week.
It does.
That's for sure.
Okay, well, you mentioned Ian Wright there. Now, were you actually at the club when he was on trial here?
He was. I was with Ian, and we stayed in Jimmy Melia's old house. It was the first week I was over. Chris signed me, or I was over on trial. He hadn't signed me at that stage. And Ian came as kind of like a left winger rather than a midfielder, and he had an awful lot of pace. But, I mean, he played a couple of games, and to be honest, if there hadn't been a stand at the end of the ground, Ian would have kept on running. So he wasn't really a winger, but you could see he had so much pace and talent, and I think he went back into non-league for a couple of years. And then obviously became an Arsenal legend. I mean, a fantastic player. But, I mean, that's just the way football is. I mean, I actually shared a house with him for a week. And every time we used to play those derby games, I would always have a drink with him afterwards because we remember we were only two young lads at the time setting off in the game or you know, starting out in the game. Yeah.
And would he remember you now, do you think?
Oh, well, he probably does remember me. I mean, I don't know. I haven't spoke to him, seen him, but I dare say if you mentioned my name, he would remember because we always used to have a wee chat after every game. You know, after all the few derby games that I did play. Yeah, that's for sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you mentioned Chris Catlin there. Now, of course, we've got a theatre show with Chris and Andy Rollings this coming Wednesday at the Rialto Theatre here in Brighton. And of course, you were signed by Chris. So, what are your memories of?
Chris was great to me. I mean, he brought me over. Him and his lovely wife Mo looked after me, set me up in a wee flat, and got everything sorted. He really looked after me. You didn't want to have him playing against you in the five-a-sides now. I must say that there because he would have kicked the ball, you, the corner flag and the goalposts. I mean, he just, even when he was on your own team, he would have kicked you just to get the ball. So I would say Chris was a fairly hard player whenever he did play now, but he was very, very committed and motivated manager. And I always remember the story where, I went over and I more or less went into the team straight away after a couple of reserve games, and I made my debut the first week and I played three or four games, and he told me to come into his office, and I thought, well, I'm playing well every Saturday, he's going to, you know, pat me on the back. And as soon as I walked in, he said to me, listen, son, he said, you're messing about in training every day, you just happen to be getting away with it on a Saturday. The difference between amateur football and professional football is you train Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, the way you have to play on Saturday. And that was a good lesson learned, because that is the difference between amateur and professional sport. You know, every day you have to, because he said you can't turn it on and off like a tap. I think I maybe mentioned that to you before, Eddie, but that's it was something that really stuck with me. You know, that's a good lesson for any young guy when it comes to professional sport.
And, I mean, do you think that that was something that, that helped you become that in, the international and get those international caps and go to a World Cup?
Yeah, absolutely. Because when I played Irish League, as long as I played a good game on Saturday, I didn't really, I found training reasonably easy. I was fairly fit in the sense that I was fast and quick, and I found, you know, I didn't have to worry about my weight or anything. So I found training reasonably easy, but he wanted to see a wee bit more intensity, and that's what you need. You need to be playing every day so that, you know, so every, it's just, so when you come to Saturday, it's just another day of training and concentrating, and he'll be able to explain that all to you as well. But I mean, that is the main thing, I think, between amateur and professional. Yeah. So it did help me become, you know, go on and do as well as what I've done, you know, that's true. Yeah.
So how well do you think you'd have done in the current side?
The current side is obviously playing against a higher level and against very, very difficult, you know, very, very good teams, which makes it very difficult. But I mean, the pitches and the quality of the ground, you know, the surfaces you're playing on now would be fantastic. For,
yeah, I mean, some of the pitches you had to play on,
I mean,
was ridiculous.
We used to get around this time of the year, and it was just like, you know, some of the pitches were really, really difficult to play on. It was kind of physically draining rather than just going out and enjoying. You know, as I said, I've been over to a couple of games, and the stadium's fantastic, and the pitch is it just looks wonderful to play on. I'm sure it is.
Yeah. I mean, well, they won't let me play on there, that's for sure. But but you know, they want some of the pitch left, I think. But I mean, yeah. How much of you of the team have you actually seen this season?
I would watch most games on Sky or whenever, or Match of the Day or stuff. You know, I see quite a bit of it. Yeah. Last season as well, particularly, you know. So, yeah, I do watch a lot of it now, yeah. And, I mean, that's the difference now. Every single match is on television, you know, to some description, whereas when we played, you might have saw the odd goal or something. There's maybe one match a week was live in our days. You know, there was very little football. But now you're kind of saturated with it, so, yeah. I mean, you can...
Which is why, when, you know, it's lovely for us to speak to like people like you, because, you know, people didn't necessarily see you. I mean, we saw you at 3 o'clock on a Saturday, and we didn't know an awful lot other than that. So, I mean,
That's true. But that's the way it's all different now. Yeah.
Okay. Well, this weekend we're up against another one of your old clubs. Actually, you didn't have that many clubs, but we're playing one of them this weekend in Burnley, who are not necessarily pulling up any trees this season. How do you see that one going?
Well, I mean, obviously, my first loyalty is to Brighton, because that's where
is.
I mean Burnley was a super club. Burnley is a bit. Burnley per capita, per size of town, is the best supported team in the country. I mean, the fanatical supporters up in Burnley, it was a fantastic old stadium too, and it was a lovely big pitch actually when I played up there. But I mean, Burnley kind of struggling a wee bit this year, but Sean Dyche has done a fantastic job to keep them in the Premiership for a few years, but it's not easy staying up there. So I think every point that Brighton gets now is, you know, is very important. Just keep getting points or 3 points. Get it. As long as there's three teams below you at the end of the season, that's all that matters for a few years. That's what I think anyway.
And particularly if one of them comes from maybe just up the road, perhaps.
that would be extra special. But no, that's true.
So have you got any plans to come over this season, Steve?
No, I haven't. The club looked after me very well last year. My brother-in-law was a mad keen Chelsea supporter all his life, so the chairman and I say the chief executive, Paul Barber, looked after me very well. So I don't expect to come over again, but it was very nice of them. And but I say always keep an eye on them, always keep an eye. It's great to see them doing well now. And they're their star is obviously rising.
Yeah. Well, if any the directors of any of the golf courses up and down the country are listening to this and they want to offer Steve a few rounds of golf, I'm sure he'd be delighted to take that up and get over to the Amex and hopefully come in and see us at the time. So many thanks for that, Steve. And we look forward to hearing from you again soon. And of course, you can hear many more stories about the Bellarmina Flyer on Wednesday night at the Rialto Theatre.
Great to speak to you, Eddie, and just pass on my good wishes to Andy and Chris. They're two great fellas. Thank you very much.
We certainly will,
Eddie.
That, of course, was the wonderful Steve Penny here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, online at radioreverb.com, on DAB, and, of course, on our podcast and in association with oldfootballshirts.com.
He's sounding fit and well, isn't he?
He's sounding very fit and well. And, of course, you can hear more from the man he signed in, which is, of course, Chris Catlin, and his mate, Andy Rollins, at the Rialto Theatre this coming Wednesday out.
Yes, and if you've listened to this podcast on Thursday onwards, then you've missed a treat. Andy and Chris, they'll be on stage with AD and myself at the Rialto Theatre. That's at the bottom of Dyke Road. Tickets are still available, £8 and £6. Doors open at 7. The fun and games starts at 8. And so do come along. Be lovely to see you. Laughs are guaranteed, especially when AD reads out Shirt of the Week. So see you there.
Yeah, thanks for that. Thanks very much. Now, I said this at the top of the show, but I just wanted to say it again because I really like saying it.
Brighton Hove Albion
8, Crystal Palace 2. But so the team news was basically Murray came in for the unfortunate Andoni. Bissouma kept his place and Montoya was in for the corrupt Bruno. Now, I mean, the match got started and, it didn't take as long to
I think it was 15 seconds before we got a corner, so that was a pretty good start.
And
we were on the front foot for once in our lives this season. We were actually on the front foot. And you could tell that the players were up for it. I mean, the Palace players, to be fair, I think actually looked as slightly sort of rabbits in the headlight, and they took a little bit of time to get going. But even then, they still had a couple of chances.
Well, yeah, well, I mean, actually, they had the first chance of the game, which fell to
Andros Townsend.
Andros Townsend with a header.
What is he doing there? Well, he's a decent player.
I thought you were talking about the way with his beard and hair combo.
I was going to say the hair. I've always remember him being the short head. I haven't seen now. It's just.
Hodgson. He looks like he's just come out of a fancy dress shop, or he's trying to disguise himself.
You're having you're making a comment on someone's barnet. Yeah. Of all people on this planet, you're making that comment.
Yeah, but if I wear a wig, it looks like I'm wearing a wig.
Yeah.
I think you're fine with Townsend up front with Zaha. That's what Hodgson likes to do, but both of them are going to need three or four chances to score one goal. We were right behind that, and he never looked like he was getting it on target at all. And, you know, thank God we've got Murray, really, because he only needs one chance to score.
Absolutely,
but, you know, those guys will score fantastic goals, but it doesn't happen often.
Well, this is what I was saying to Jay from the Eagles Beak last week. I said they would absolutely kill to have a striker like Murray in their side now.
Well, that's their problem, so don't care.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean, it was. Let's talk about the penalty.
From the north stand, it was definitely a penalty.
Now, I've got to be honest that from the west stand up, I did actually have a big question mark floating across the stadium. I really wasn't 100% sure.
Now, I mean, I've got a theory on this. It was because, I mean, Grace Bailey is square though, but it was crowded out first time around. But he got another go, and it goes down under the challenge of a McCarthy. Now, that first foray after the ball from Gross, he did go down.
No, he didn't. You've said this after the game, and I had a look again, and he didn't go down. He was on his feet the whole time. The only time he did go down was when he got down for the penalty. So, and I don't think he was really particularly clattered for it at all, or impeded at all before that, until such time as, and I think if anything, was it MacArthur who would
go with?
Yeah, I think he effectively went into MacArthur's. Yeah. And I know that this thing of he got the ball, well, that isn't even in itself necessarily the argument itself. It's not as though he went through Izquierdo to get it. It was a decent, clean tackle, all a little bit sort of messy. It's just all about the angle from which the referee saw it. Now, probably from just his, in theory, even though he was in the correct position, he was probably in the worst position to actually give it one way or the other, because the foot was out effectively on the blind side of the pair of them.
Now, if that happened next season,
we wouldn't have had a penalty.
No.
Oh, good. Let's just enjoy it.
Well, exactly.
I mean, Palace is Palace's own fault. They should have cleared it. The two defenders got in their own way, so...
Is that the story of the game, though?
Yeah, but that was a bit of Keystone Cop defending. I mean, they clattered each other, and the ball just came back into the area. But that said, and I think someone did actually mention about the fact that the keeper picked the ball up, and you think, well, though, no, it wasn't a deliberate pass back. It was a tackle, so you couldn't even claim that, really. It's not about whether it's a soft penalty. It's just the wrong penalty. It shouldn't have been given. I thought it was a right tackle. I wasn't sure at the time, even from 70 yards away, and you can't tell, but there's something about it. That...
Well, clearly I'm going to say it's a definite penalty, and because the ref gave it. I'm going to go there.
Yeah, well, I think that even the referee has to operate within the laws of the game. So,
Glenn was happy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Gave him another opportunity.
How did he finish that penalty, AD?
Was it with aplomb?
It was with
off
some
the bar.
Off the bar.
Even Solly Marsh said afterwards he thought it had gone over.
I've got here, Murray slots home the spot kick for goal number 102.
It is.
How many left to go, Al?
22 left to be the all-time leading Albion scorer. How cool is that? And what's more, I mean, I know he's an old man, and I'm sure he has humbugs and, you know, some very nice Brian Nylon stay press trousers for a man of his age. However, he's with us for at least another season. If he carries on doing what he's doing now, he'll beat that record, and that is actually quite an achievement.
Now, obviously, we'll talk about the second incident in a second, though. But I mean, obviously, there's a question mark about his availability for this weekend. Now,
this is a new injury. Don't forget.
I do foresee a time where he isn't first choice this season.
Well, I think a lot of us do actually. But you know, it's all the while he is first choice. Great, yeah. And that is. But now we have. A separate option, and this is the nature of what we've been talking about over the past few weeks. Andoni is clearly a different type of striker to Murray, and we'll talk about the third goal in a minute. It's a different type, so you have to set up differently.
Just to quote our good friend and real regular Andy Bass, he says, I no longer stress about losing Murray.
I think Murray, though, will be first choice for the rest of this season. I think he, when he's going to be available and fit, he will always play this season.
I agree. So, when you say he's not always going to be available, no, but he will be, if he is available, there's a good chance he'll be, you know, fit and raring to go.
Okay, well, let's talk about how he got crocked then. And it was a Gross found Murray in the box and, he was shoved over, basically.
What we've been saying about Gross, and he's not been quite on it this season, possibly, that was a superb ball to Murray. It was a great run. I felt it was more of a penalty than the one that wasn't.
But that one was a penalty. That we didn't get it. Yeah, so basically.
Well, depends what match of the day didn't think it was. But it looked more of a penalty. But I was a long way away. But even watching it on the replays, you feel that Tompkins, wasn't it, went in there.
Yeah,
more aggressive than he needed to.
But the thing is, it wasn't a corner either. So.
No, well, if it wasn't a penalty, it wasn't a corner. It should have been a goal kick.
It's effectively three wrongs have made a right here, haven't they? The original one wasn't a penalty. The second one wasn't a corner. Should have been a penalty. It should have been a goal kick. So, you know, somewhere between us, there's... I know football doesn't work that way. And you know what they say about all these things even themselves out? Well, yes, but let's do it correctly.
Yeah, and Tompkins sort of fell over him, didn't he? And then sort of landed on him. That sort of looked to me to cause the injury.
Yeah, I didn't get the ball, he said. I didn't get the ball. Well, if you were really going to be that honest, if you didn't get the ball, mate, that means it should be a penalty.
Yeah.
He almost talked himself into giving away a penalty.
I agree,
Well, Murray went off for treatment. And unfortunately, during the melee
treatment.
Basically, Shane.
He had a rush of blood to the head. Brad, what do you reckon to this?
Very, very silly. Just you just don't know how this keeps happening these days in football at all. You know what's going to happen the moment you put your head in there. You still do it, and you know what happened in the game. But how much it could have changed the course had what proceeded to happen after Shane got sent off didn't happen. Who knows? That's a different game completely, especially when you look at how the sending off has impacted the last three games before Palace. It's
amazing, all this mental strength training, you know, they're given over and above, and he has completely lost it. It was a senseless thing to do right in front of the referee.
Yeah.
I can only assume that he said something, that Van Aanholt said something.
Even so, that's no reason. All right, you know, he's a foot taller than Van Aanholt. You know, if he's going to say something waspish to wind him up, fine, he's done the job. I mean, and let's face it, all right, we had a corner, but when Duffy got sent off, to a man, all right, how many people saw it at the time, who knows? But you realise...
And even all the replays, no, they didn't catch it until...
One of them did, but that was it. And you realise it was a stupid thing to do. It could have gone... I mean, we can laugh about it now because, you know, we could say it was a great tactical substitution. Look at what happened. But the reality is that the bloke was a 12-bore idiot because, all right, we dodged a bullet with the Palace game because he's out for 3.5 games. The half game, obviously, the one that we got. But he's now going to miss Burnley. Okay, I think we'll be all right. But we've got Chelsea and Arsenal. We need our first 11, and it's not going to be there.
Okay. Well, because of that incident, unfortunately, Pascal Gross was the fall guy, and he got the hook.
Duffy owes Gross a big drink, believe me.
And then Liam Balogun came in, had a look around. What am I going to do now? Oh, I know. Score.
What a finish.
A brilliant finish, wasn't it? I mean, for a centre back, backs I used to play with.
Can I just say pinpoint cross from Solly March?
Yep, again.
I'm not sure afterwards in the interview he sort of think he didn't hit it as well as he should. He didn't, because he went to the near post and sort of head back.
How many aiming for?
Who knows?
Top corner.
He does well when he beats the first man sometimes.
Oh, yeah. I say, how many times in those situations have you seen players lean back and they've completely skied it from those chances?
Yeah.
Our centre back just comes on and.
Well, he smashes it. Now, he murders it.
You've got to look at, I mean, Palace, what they do. We had 9 men on the pitch at that particular moment in time. And
they were all bundling around Lewis Dunk, who was actually right next to Balogun. Yeah. There was 2 of them went with Dunk. And they just left Balogun alone. That's the point. I mean, it was a inadvertently steered by the Palace at the near post header. But the two defenders, none of them stayed with Balogun. Both went with Dunk, and Balogun was lonely in the box. I mean, the fact his finish was a photographer's delight, but it put us 2-0 up, and we're thinking, great, we've got a little bit of a cushion.
Yeah, and Palace did try to have a go as best as they could, but they were absolutely abject for most of the game. But there was a terrific goal line clearance from Bernardo,
and Bernardo had a stormer. I think he had a very good game. He kept a very, very lively Andros Townsend quite quiet. I mean, we have to consider, here we are talking about the goals and the incidents, we have to consider how good our defenders were for the most part.
But you wanted to talk about Eve Bissouma before we talk about the goal. Yes.
No, I was happy to talk about Bissouma generally. I mean, for the Huddersfield game and for this game, I thought he was absolutely immense. And if we're talking about, like, I take your point about keeping the shirt, and it's going to be a tricky one for Houghton, but hey, that's what he gets paid for. He has really stepped up to the plate. We now have, and I don't know what the rest of the panel here thinks, I think that he is our third choice midfielder. I think he's actually gone ahead of Bahram Kayal in the reckoning for a berth in the midfield. What do you reckon, guys?
I think you're right. I think he has, but it depends on what kind of team you want to put out. If you want to be more defensive, I can see Kayal playing more. If you want to be really attacking, Bissouma's going to come in.
Definitely. And there's always the fact that Bissouma can play in that role behind the striker as well. So it depends who you're playing, where you're away from home, because I always find him having him as that pacey option behind someone like Murray away from home has always been preferable to Gross, which is what Chris was going for early in the season.
I'm finding it hard to disagree, but I'm always seem to be a lot happier when Bahram Kayal is in the team.
I think it's the value having different types of players for, you know, and they're individuals in their right. They are different, and we're blessed at the moment with some great centre midfielders. I think Bahram has been a great servant for the club. I'm not saying that's time for him to go, but I think he's really come back into the team and just gone with it well this year. And quietly, you know, and he does a good job within the team.
Okay. Well, let's talk about the goal of the match then.
Goal of the season. We're going to go some to beat it as a goal of the season, mate.
I think we'll beat it with ease. I mean, it was great. It was a great goal. He did it all himself. It was. People were saying it's the best goal they've ever seen at the Amex. If that goal wasn't against Palace, would you really be saying that?
I think it's the whole environment. We're 2-0. It's coming to half time. A lot of people in front of me had already gone down to get their half time refreshments. A clearance from the box, and you just see the Brighton man, Andoni, running after that. And you can tell, even from the north stand, that he was catching up. He goes past him and he pulls. It's pulled back and he scores. Will it be the best goal at the Amex this season? Not sure. Because Tompkins got that sort of final touch that put in his path. Sort of doesn't make it superb. But I think it's one of the most celebrated goals at the Albion for a long, long time.
For the time that it was scored, especially the timing, for the fact it was a fellow making his first start at the Amex, for the fact that we've actually got a very fast centre forward, and for the fact that it actually made a Palace defender look an absolute mug.
I mean, how many times did we see Craig McHale-Smith do exactly the same thing with that run? Not necessarily with the finish, but he used to. It was a great chaser of lost clauses.
Well, therein lies the difference. We've got someone who's got the final cross.
That's the kind of player we've missed for a while.
But I'm sure he scored. I'm sure he scored one of those.
Well, if you can remember it, if anyone out there can remember a goal that's similar by Craig McHale-Smith, do let us know, because I can't.
We have definitely seen better goals at the end.
And it was the last kick before. I mean, let's face it, the context as well is along the lines that, you know, we were down to 10 men. We knew that at some point we were going to be having our, you know, bus parking game again. And to have it with a cushion of 3-0, I'm thinking, well, Palace are not going to get back from this. So as much as we're disappointed that we see this defensive display all the time, I think that actually the team had actually earned their right to not sit on the lead, but to actually think, well, come on, Palace, let's see how good you are.
I think there's always still a worry, even at 2-0, when you're down to 10 men, you never know.
Most dangerous score line. Most dangerous score line.
Exactly. So, but 3 is just that. It's that little extra cushion, and if we're honest, that was just the cherry on top of the marvellous cake.
And again, Lettermore singing the Conkles at half time.
just to move on, then, should we have seen parity in numbers on the pitch?
Yes.
Should Zahar have gone?
He was showing his studs more than once. He was a lucky boy. He's got that perennial fixed look on his face.
He's left the gas on, yeah, I know.
So miserable.
He is.
Enjoy the game.
It's the hypocrisy of how he comes out and talks about being targeted, and then he's got away with one there.
He has, yeah.
Well, I mean, Montoya was brilliant against him, but you think Montoya's probably come up against the best in the world and he's played Messi in training, and Zahar comes up against him. I mean, no bother for him. Meh.
But then, shortly after that, he did get the penalty. Which was
fair enough. I think a little bit naive from Balogun. But
and Milivojevic slotted it away.
Matty Ryan dancing side to side in the
goal. But not without Bissouma. We see a cheeky side of him. For those that have seen the highlights, he didn't see it at the time. You know, the ref is trying to position the ball on the penalty spot very carefully, and the penalty taker, he's putting it there. Ref moves it again. In comes Bissouma, sort of like, you know, nonchalantly just sort of scratching the back of his head, not really. Kicks the ball away.
It's amazing.
Gets himself a yellow for it, but you realise, and then his dance routine at the end of it, pure joy.
I think you put that up there. I think something I wanted to bring up was after Balogun's goal was Dunk not choosing to celebrate the players, giving it one to the Palace fans.
They were giving it to him all game.
Exactly. And the right moment for him to give it back. And if there's anyone who's ever understood what the derby meant,
that's Chelsea fans for you.
Didn't the club tweet him kicking the ball away, and he replied, oops.
And that's a brilliant place to leave. Obviously, we're still absolutely buzzing about winning that one, but we've got the Burnley game to come this weekend. Let's hope we can maintain that good form, and hopefully Ashley Barnes will be very upset at the end of it. But that's all we've got time for this week,
and we'll see you therefore on Wednesday at the Rialto.
Absolutely. So thank you to Bradley Stratton, to Simon Maskell, to Alan Wares. I've been AD Packham. We'll see you at the Rialto on Wednesday night. Thanks for listening. See you then. Bye. We'll be right back.
Sua.
Bisuma!